Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
For some of us, our family home is the single biggest asset that we will ever own. It always comes to the time in our lives when we have the empty nest. The children have left, and we just don't need that bigger house anymore. So what do we do? Well, we need to find ourselves a great agent. We probably aren't in the business of buying and selling houses. So how do we make sure that we can get the best price for our property? Hi, it's Ann Nelson, your host for the show. And I'm really pleased to be talking with Aaron Hendon from Seattle. Aaron is a realtor, a real estate investor, author, educator, and speaker. His book, Don't Get Fooled Again, How to Find the Right Agent. So welcome, Aaron.
Thanks, Anne. How are you?
I'm really great. I'm so interested to be talking with you and hearing what you've got to share.
Great. Well, I'm really excited for the opportunity. Thank you so much for having me on.
I usually start off by asking for a little bit of background on my guests. So what would you like to tell us and my listeners about yourself?
Well, let's see. I live in Seattle, Washington. Actually, I live on a small island off the coast of Seattle. I've been a realtor I've been on this side of a real estate for about 5 years. I was an investor before that. Also an educator, a speaker, and an author. Let's see. I have a 11-year-old boy and a daughter who's going to be 14 on Tuesday.
Wow.
And I love the opportunity to make a difference with people when they're looking at buying or selling their house. It's such a profound moment for them. So great.
Is Seattle a big market there? Can you just tell us a little bit about where you live?
Sure. Yeah, the Seattle market is, Seattle's a big city. It's, you know, probably the, I don't know, certainly top 20 in the U.S. And the Seattle market is one of the top three fastest selling markets in the country, in the U.S. Houses are, you know, going multiple offers, way over asking price. It's crazy, crazy, crazy. Lowest inventory in 17 years here. So very, very hot seller's market here now. And, you know, big city.
So there must be good employment opportunities there in Seattle if the real estate market is thriving.
Yes. You know, you got Amazon, Microsoft is here. The Silicon Valley is setting up campuses up here now. So there's a lot of tech. And then a lot of people are coming down from Vancouver because that market just got overheated. And there's a lot of foreign investment, a lot of Chinese money, things like that coming into this area. So
a lot of my listeners are looking towards their retirement options and what are they going to do with themselves. And I suppose here and maybe over there, a lot of them look to downsize and even relocate to a warmer climate. So do you have much experience with those sort of sellers?
Sure. That's a big reason why people are motivated to sell their home is that the kids are gone. You know, I've probably done a half a dozen deals this year so far just with people who are, you know, their kids are graduating high school. It's time to get smaller. They want to sell at the top of the market and take advantage of the disparity between a high sale price and getting a smaller place. So, yeah, that's a very common scenario for people.
Right. And so these sort of people aren't your typical, or are they typical? I mean, they're not used to selling very often, are they?
Well, nobody really is. I mean, unless you're an investor, unless that's what you do, is invest in real estate, you're going to buy or sell a house three, maybe four times in your life. So no one's really, you know, there's no such thing as a seasoned, you know, I mean, what's the most you could imagine someone who's not investing selling a house? 6 times in their life? 7 times? I mean, how would you do that, you know?
Mm. So where do they start? How do they find a good real estate agent?
Yeah, and that's a really great question. And I don't think that's a question a lot of people ask themselves, frankly. I don't think people give a lot of thought to it, because I think in the background is sort of your, you know, even in the background of the question, you know, that's not a typical buyer or that's not a typical seller. There's some sort of inference or already existing context or already existing paradigm for people where they're expected to know how to buy or sell a house. So they don't, or how to find a realtor. It's not something people give a ton of thought to. And I think that's a real mistake. I think there's a lot of really easy ways to go about finding a really good realtor. But mostly I find that people, you know, are going to hire a friend, or they're going to look online for who has a lot of good reviews, or, you know, some other version of someone they can just trust. Like, I know they won't rip me off. So I'm going to hire my mom's cousin's best friend's uncle,
right,
or something like that, rather than, you know, how do you find someone to work for you? I mean, just to role play it for a minute, Anne, if you wanted to hire someone to work for you, how would you go about it? What's one of the things you would do early on?
I'd probably go on to Google search and look at the suburb, I suppose, or the city and the suburb where the property was located. I'd try that, I suppose, if I didn't know anyone. And I know there's some agent referral type businesses now online. So maybe that's a start. I don't know. What do you reckon?
Yeah. Well, I think even more fundamental than that is to think about it in terms of hiring someone. You're hiring someone. And I think when you hire anyone, you start with the premise that you're going to interview them. And I don't think people start with that premise, that they're going to actually interview. They're going to develop a series of questions that would indicate whether or not they are qualified to deliver the purpose, you know, fulfill on the purpose you have. You know, and if you're selling a home, the purpose is what? What do you want when you sell your
home? The best price possible, I suppose.
Totally, right? You'd want to find someone who sells houses for the most money. It's the most basic sort of thing. I want to sell my house for the most money, so I should go look for someone who has a track record of selling houses for the most money. But do you know no one does that?
Interesting.
No one actually says, hey, show me over the last 12 months how much you sold houses for. And tell me how that compares to the local average.
Mm.
And it just seems like it's the most basic fun. It's, if you were hiring someone to work for you, you would ask them, show me the track record of how you've done with this thing I'm hiring you to do.
Right.
Whatever thing it is. You know, I'm hiring a nanny. Great. Give me the 5 people that you most recently nannied for. I'm going to call them, you know. I'm going to hire a CFO. Great. You know, show me how you did in the last 3 companies you worked for, or an accountant or a lawyer. Great. How many cases like this have you won? It's not a radical idea, except talk to a realtor and go, oh, yeah, I like that one. He's good. I liked him.
So what sort of mistakes do sellers make when they're looking for an agent?
Well, I think that's a big one, is they don't have an organized plan by which they're going to interview people. You know, when I was probably 18, 19 years old, I went to work at Burger King. That's a pretty low risk job, you know? And I sat down and that manager had a series of questions that they asked me. And I could tell that manager had a series of questions that they asked everybody. It was a way of comparing apples to apples. It was a way of actually leveling the field. I'm going to ask everyone these questions, and then we're going to know something because we asked everyone the same questions. Except a mistake people make when they hire a realtor is they don't have a plan of, well, what are the questions that if I asked everyone, it would give me an indicator of who was the best.
Oh, it's not to do with how many houses they've sold.
Well, I mean, I think how many houses I sold is a part of it. I think you don't want to find someone who sold 8 houses last year. I don't, you know, like we were talking before the show, I'm not sure the arrangement in, you know, down under for how people get paid, but I can't imagine someone could make a good living on 8 houses a year, which means they're part-time. And do you really want to hire someone who's part-time? So I think you want to make sure they're at least selling enough houses that you're hiring someone who only does this. But the difference between selling 50 and 100, let's say, I don't know that that's material. I don't know that someone who sells 100 is that much better for me. In fact, they could be worse for me than someone who sells 50.
Right.
Like that. They may not have the time for me when I need it. I don't know. There's other questions to ask. So, but I don't think that's a lot of agents will rely on, well, I sold 50 homes in your neighborhood last year, okay, as if that was some magic number or something.
How do you know what you even want to sell your house for? How do you know what's a good price?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the couple of ways you could do it is you could take a few months before you decided to sell and watch the market in detail. You know, go to open houses, watch the paper. In the U.S., after it closes, the sale price is public record, and you can look it up. So you can get a sense of the sale price to the close price. You know, yeah. I'm sorry, the list price. So did that house go for more than they asked, less than they asked, how many days on market? And you could track it for a couple of months, or you could ask a couple of realtors to come in and give you a price analysis of the home, what's called a comparative market analysis. Realtors call it a CMA, and they will do that work for you, and they should do that for free. If they don't do it for free, that's a really good way for them to advertise that they're lousy agents. So you can just tell them to go away, but any agent should be able to give you that. And I'd get 3 or 4 of them. So you got a range, because it's always an opinion, because you don't set the price, San. I don't set the price. The homeowner doesn't set the price. The only one that sets the price for anything in any market on any product that anyone's selling is the market. The market sets the price. The market says what it's willing to pay for something. And so you're always guessing.
How do sellers go with their property in so far as it's been their home, they've been there for a long time? How much does emotion play in the price and just selling generally?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because it plays a price in what the seller, frequently, let's say it that way, plays a role in the amount of money a seller thinks they should get. You know, they love it. They own it. It's theirs. There's a psychological bias for things that we own being more valuable to us. So we tend to overvalue things that we own, and home sellers are no different. So anything that we own, we're going to think is more valuable. So they think it should have something to do with it. And in reality, when you go to look for something in the store, or you go to buy something, and how little do you care how emotionally attached the seller is to something?
Not really.
Not really. So the amount that the seller thinks it's worth shouldn't enter into it at all, because the seller doesn't have anything to say about how much it's worth. So whether they raise their kids there and they have their little height markings on the door frame and all that stuff, it's cute, but no one wants to buy their home. No one wants to buy your home. People want to buy a house that they can turn into their home. No one wants to buy your home. So you can't value it as your home. You have to value it as a commodity in a marketplace full of other commodities.
Should we be conscious of the fees that are involved in the real estate deal, or is that secondary to the price?
Well, it's not secondary. It's going to impact your net, what you take away, right? You've got to pay attention to what the price is going to be, less whatever you had to pay to sell it. It's the cost of sales. If you were running a business, it would be the cost of sales. There's the realtors get paid, the lawyers get paid, whatever it costs you to stage it, clean it, market it, photo it, all the stuff that you need to do. All that stuff needs, you need to know how much all that's going to cost you. So that's an interesting way to look at it. You know, you should come up with a price that the market will pay. Okay. So you get three realtors in, they give you the price that they think they can sell it at. I wouldn't just jump at the highest one. The highest one may be the right one, but I wouldn't just jump at it because it's the highest one. Because frankly, anyone could tell you they could sell it for anything, but unless they're the ones who are going to buy it, I would make sure that I saw the evidence that had them say that. So once you get a price for it and you subtract the fees, you'll get what's your net for that house. After you subtract what you owe on it to the previous loan, that's your net profit, net takeaway. And if that number isn't high enough to make it worth the sell, don't sell it. Yep. You can't raise the price. That doesn't make any sense. The market's not going to pay you more just because you need to get more out of it. The market's only going to pay you what the market's going to pay you. You don't have to sell it though, right, at a price you don't want. But you do, if you're going to sell it, you're only going to get for it what the market will pay.
Okay. So what makes a great agent that gets the best price for your property?
Oh, good. Well, you know, first of all, if I was talking to agents, I would tell them one thing. I could train them on how to get more money. We get 5% over average for our listing, so I know we're pretty good. But if you're a consumer, the question isn't what do they do, because I would guarantee you the things I would do here are going to be different than someone would do there, because I don't even do the same things for every house. You know, every house is unique in a certain way. So it's not so much what are the things that need to get done. I mean, some things are universal, but overall, more important question for your listeners would be, how do they know that the agent they're hiring does the right things? And how they could tell if they do the right things is they consistently get the most money compared to market average than anyone else they're interviewing. And if you find someone and you've got four agents that you've interviewed and you've got one of them clearly sells houses for more money than the average, then whatever they do should be working. I wouldn't even necessarily get into the weeds with, show me your advertising plan and tell me what you do. How would you know if that was the right thing to do? You don't. You know, you sell houses three times in your life. This person sells houses for more money in less time than any of the other people. Good. Whatever they do is working. Let them do that.
So over there, typically when a property is offered for sale, is the buyer working directly with the selling agent, or does the buyer have their own agent working for them?
Well, you could do it any way you want. Typically, each side has their own representation. A smart seller will have their own representation, and a smart buyer will have their own representation. It's the most expensive thing you're ever going to buy or sell. You should have someone that knows what they're doing representing you. That's my thought on that, right? And you certainly don't want to go in the transaction as a layman, not doing this stuff very often, and go into the transaction up against the person that's representing the other side and have that person be a professional, right? I mean, over here, there's a fiduciary responsibility for the agent representing their side. So if I'm a seller and I'm going by myself with no fiduciary and I'm negotiating with that person has a fiduciary responsibility to get the most money out of me. You know, that person is going to try and get me to sell a house for the least possible money. I need someone on my side that's trying to get me to sell the house for the most money.
Well, that's an interesting concept, because it probably isn't something that happens every day over here. Yes, I think I prefer your way. We have what's called buyer's agents that go and negotiate on, but they're not typically used that often. Typically here are dealing directly mm-hmm. with the seller's agent. So I can see what you're saying, that you'd be better off having someone on your side working for you, because, the seller's agent's there for the seller, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're going up against a professional, you know, and I don't know what it's like there, but, you know, here for sure, people do not enjoy negotiating. Americans are just lousy at negotiating. It's distasteful. You know, we don't do it. And so now you're going up against someone who's getting paid to negotiate. I don't know. I can't see how it's a well thought out move.
I see you've won quite a few awards too. That must make you stand out there in the Seattle market.
Yeah, you know, I try. I do my best.
So what else should we know when we're looking to find an agent to sell this house that we've lived in for a long time?
Yeah, well, I think when you're looking for an agent is find someone who's going to tell you the ugly truth. You know, I think when you're willing to hear whatever it is, you want someone who's going to tell you the truth. You don't want someone who's going to you. You know, someone who's going to just say what you want to hear, because it's too expensive and it's too emotional. And if you can get someone on your side who's going to tell you the bad news, whatever the bad news is, whatever it is, that's the best possible person you can get. Someone who's going to actually be straight with you. So, you know, I'd look for that kind of person, someone who's not afraid to tell you how it is.
Is it the seller's responsibility to make sure their house is in a pristine condition? Are they supposed to renovate it before they sell it, or are buyers looking to put their own stamp on that property?
Yeah, that's a great question, Anne. Almost always, other than cleaning and maybe some painting, some light patching of some sort, you know, like there's a hole in this wall or whatever, and painting neutral colors, other than those things, typically landscaping, cleaning, painting, touch up, no other remodel never returns, you know, more than a dollar for a dollar spent. There's not a positive ROI. You know, now maybe you are a contractor and it's cheap for you to do that or something. But unless you're a professional, you're flipping houses and you're really going to go from gut to remodel, you're not going to make the money on remodeling it. You're much better off saving that. You won't get as much money for the house, but you're not out as much money for the house. You know, you didn't put that money in. In other words, putting in that new kitchen, the new kitchen cost you $15,000. You ain't getting $15,000 more for the house because you put in a new kitchen. You'll get $12,000 more for the house. And honestly, you would need to get $20,000 more for the house if you put a new kitchen in to make it worth the hassle. You don't just need the $15,000. If you were going to get $15,000 more, why would you do it at all? You wouldn't. You wouldn't put $15,000 in to get $15,000 out. That would be silly because it is a hassle. And who knows? Because people don't want to buy your home. They don't want to buy your home. They don't care what you think and they don't like your taste. So you don't have to worry about it. Just clean it, make it nice, make it look as much like it could be their home as you possibly can. Get as much of you out of it as possible. You want the most money? Good. Make it look as little like you as you possibly can.
Right. So you're talking about decluttering, I suppose.
Decluttering, cleaning, landscaping, have it have some great curb appeal, have it be so when people come in, and even if it needs some remodeling, even if it's an old kitchen or the bathrooms are old, great. Have them be really clean. Have them be like shiny, corners shiny. Invest in a house cleaner. Deep clean that house.
That's good information and good tips there, Aaron. To finish up now, what's your final summary of your tips finding a great agent?
Well, I lay those all out in my book, as I have 7 questions that you can ask. So, but I think overall, I think the most important thing is you want to look at it like you're the CEO of a company that has assets worth X, and whatever your house is worth, make that be the X. But you're the CEO. And you're looking for a salesperson / COO to manage a project called selling your house. And if you put yourself in the position of a CEO, you will ask the right questions because you're the CEO. The buck stops with you. You're not going to defer to some agent. You're not going to just hire your if you were the CEO, you wouldn't hire a kid's soccer coach to represent you or to be your COO just because you like them.
Right.
You wouldn't hire your cousin's best friend's nephew just because mom asked you to. You wouldn't have them be the CFO.
How do they get a copy of your book? Is it online or where would they go?
Yeah, there's 2 things about it, Ann. Thanks. They can go to my website, which is www.don'tgetfooledagainbook.com, and they can download the first book, which is 7 questions you must ask to avoid hiring the wrong real estate agent. And if you live in Australia, you'll have to modify the question slightly to be consistent with your marketplace. but you can get a free copy of that. That will also, the second thing is that'll put them on my mailing list, and I'm about 4 to 6 weeks out from my next book, which is called Real Estate Blind Spots. And that's a guide to finding a realtor you trust and buying or selling your home with confidence and ease. And that's a much bigger book. It's going to probably sell for $20, but people that download the first book will get a copy of the second book for free.
Wow, that's a generous offer.
Yeah, I'd love to get people's opinions about it. It's a much more in-depth guide, and I put a lot of heart and soul in it, so I want to get a lot of people's feedback on it before we go out for release.
Thanks. It's been great talking to you today. You've brought up some really great points and very interesting to hear about Seattle. Pleased to meet you, and I'm going to download the book, Don't Get Fooled Again, How to Find the Right Agent. Thanks, Aaron.
Anne, thanks so much for the opportunity.
We can go to don'tgetfooledagainbook.com. And your company that you work for?
I'm a Keller Williams agent.
So how do they contact you if they are interested in making contact with you?
You can put my email address in the show notes. It's Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at candco.me. So C-A-N-D-C-O.me, candco.me.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.